Well, Cleveland Browns coach Mike Pettine had said that the plan was to pick a starting quarterback for week one of the regular season and in turn the third week of the preseason on Tuesday, barring unforeseen circumstances. The unforeseen circumstances apparently have happened because after Monday night's game, it may take another preseason game before the Browns can decide who the starter will be. Typically, that third preseason game is a dress rehearsal for the regular season. You know who the starter is. Now, I know in Minnesota, Teddy Bridgewater versus Matt Cassel may not be resolved until after the third preseason game, although it's pointing toward Cassel in Cleveland. Who knows who it's pointing toward? Neither guy looked very good last night. Brian Hoyer completed only 2 of 6 passes. Manziel completed 7 of 16, not a much better completion percentage. There are also some plays where Manziel had open receivers and he didn't have a lot of pressure and he just flat out missed the receiver. You can't have that in a West Coast offense. Can't have that in any offense. You have got to be able to hit the open man when you don't have pressure and when that guy is running a crossing route. Hit him in stride. He keeps going. You gain some yardage. So remains to be seen which guy will get the job. And I think one of the problems of this whole quarterback competition in the training camp and into the preseason, when you split the reps, what happens is you dilute the opportunity of the starting quarterback to really be as good as he can be. Now, I know last year in Philadelphia, they had a true competition. They split the reps throughout the offseason, training camp, preseason, ultimately went with Mike Vick. He ultimately got injured. Ultimately, Nick Foles has a great season. But I think the problem in Cleveland, as you're trying to learn this Kyle Shanahan offense, which, especially for Kyle Shanahan, much more complicated than what he ran at for Johnny Manziel, much more complicated than what he ran at Texas A&M, you've got a problem when you're not using and getting the full reps as you would be getting if you were the starter. Why not draft the guy? You know when you make him the 22nd overall pick in the draft, he's going to be your quarterback eventually. Why not make him the quarterback now and let him be the guy who got all the reps with the first team? Let him grow. Let him develop. Let him become more comfortable. Let him grow into that job. Otherwise, don't draft him. Don't trade up from 26 to 22. Use that 26th overall pick on somebody who could help your team now at some other position because you're going to go with Brian Hoyer. And I don't know why Brian Hoyer becomes the default either. He started 3 games last year, was injured early in the 3rd game. Yes, they won all 3 of those games, but now he's the savior for the Cleveland Browns just because he's from the Cleveland area. He's coming off a torn ACL. He was available for anyone who wanted him back in the 2013 preseason. Before the season, off season, the Browns swooped in and got him after he was cut by the Cardinals, and it worked out a little bit. That doesn't mean it's going to work out a lot. And apparently they're not sold on him, or they would have gone with Manziel, or they would have gone with Hoyer from the start and not drafted Manziel. They should have gone with Manziel from the start. And now, what are you doing? When Mike Pettine says he's going to go with the guy that gives the team the best chance to win in week one, what about week 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 beyond? I think you need to have a quarterback that is your quarterback and you trust your quarterback and you do everything you can to get your quarterback ready and not dilute and undermine his ability to prepare by splitting the reps. So Hoyer or Manziel, it's too late to make that all-in pick the way it should have been made. Now they just have to hope for the best. And once they get to week one, especially if it's Manziel, you got to stick with Manziel going forward. You also have to stick with Manziel, even though he showed last night combination of impishness, which we've seen from him from time to time. I'm going to do things my own way, but also the reality that maybe he can lose his composure. We saw the middle finger get flashed at the Washington sideline, and yes, they'd been riding him, and Brian Arakpo did the money sign after he was sacked by Ryan Kerrigan earlier in the game, and you still have to be able to compose yourself. You have to be able to withstand whatever it is that's happening, whatever anyone's saying, whether it's an opposing player, opposing coach, whether it's a fan, anybody, you have to compose yourself. And even though it won't be a factor and shouldn't be a factor in who the starting quarterback is, you have to look at that and say, do we have to worry about Johnny Manziel losing his composure in some other way, in some other fashion? He'll never do the middle finger again once he pays his $11,000 fine, $11,025 according to the fine schedule, and he will be fine. Dean Blandino, the NFL VP of officiating, told me earlier today on the Dan Patrick Show that Manziel should have been flagged. The officials didn't see it. The league office has seen it along with everyone else. That reaction from Manziel was great when it was obvious that a PR representative was telling him to get ready because the storm of questions is coming about the middle finger. So it's Manziel being Manziel on one hand. On the other hand, you just have to wonder, will there be some lapse? Will there be some emotional outburst? Will there be something that happens at some point when Manziel is the starter that gives up 15 yards of field position at a time when the team desperately needs it? And will it be pushing and shoving? Will it be words to the official? Will it be spiking the football in frustration? Anything and everything that can happen when a guy gets upset and he's not in control of his actions, and that heat of the moment could be a problem, and that's something they're going to need to work on. The heat of the moment almost got the better of Cowboys owner Jerry Jones during the draft. You know, this is something that Jones has been talking about, and he keeps talking about it. He talked about it today on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas-Fort Worth, because there's a book that's out there that claims that Stephen Jones, Jerry's son and also the COO of the Cowboys, had to physically restrain Jerry from putting in the draft card with Johnny Manziel's name on it. Then there was a report disputing that, and then Jerry Jones said, well, figuratively, it basically came down to that. And he created this idea that he was battling himself in his own mind about what to do, and ultimately it is what he wants to do. It's not going to be anybody holding him back from saying, draft Manziel. I just don't know why he keeps talking about it. What does he gain from talking about how close he came? And he's previously said he came that close to drafting Manziel. What do you gain from that? The guy that you did take, Zach Martin, with the 15th overall pick, has got to be thinking, well, what's wrong with me? And then your current starting quarterback has to be thinking, how much longer am I going to be the starting quarterback? And maybe in a roundabout way, this is Jerry Jones' way of letting Tony Romo know that he better step up or he's going to be stepping out as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. They've made that big financial commitment to Romo in 2013. Could become 2015, 2016, whenever the Cowboys move on if Romo doesn't move up and get to the playoffs and maybe win a game or two. And I continue to stick by my prediction that in 2016, when the Cowboys visit the Browns, they do that rotation every fourth year. They play every team from the AFC North and then AFC South and East and West and so on. Next up for the AFC North for the Cowboys and the rest of the NFC East is 2016 at Cleveland. I think Manziel will be the quarterback of the Browns, and I think Romo will not be the quarterback of the Cowboys. Although after last night, maybe neither guy will be the quarterback of either team. Maybe Manziel will be the quarterback of the Cowboys by then, because the Browns will have given up on him by then. A lot to be determined, a lot to be seen. And the Browns weren't the only team playing last night. Washington was on the field as well. And we're going to talk to Rich Tandler of CSN Washington about the concerns that team now has going forward, especially with RG3 showing a certain amount of recklessness, the kind of recklessness that got him injured back in 2012 as a rookie. He almost got injured last night against Cleveland. We'll talk to Rich Tandler about that, and then we'll talk to you. It'll be PFT Planet time. We got your tweets. We'll open the phone lines. We'll see what you have to say. Before that, we'll see what Rich Tandler has to say. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. That's Washington coach Jay Gruden talking about starting quarterback Robert Griffin III. That was one of the big stories 2 years ago. There was this sense of inevitability that Griffin eventually would get injured based upon that reckless playing style. Electric, exciting, productive, effective, ultimately reckless, ultimately torn ACL, ultimately marred his preparations for 2013, and now 2014 has a feel of a crossroads season, and it could depend largely on whether or not RG3 can protect himself. Joining us now to talk about that and other topics related to the Washington franchise, we've got Rich Tandler of CSNWashington.com. Let's start with RG3. Can he protect himself? Can you unlearn what seems to be instinctive when it comes to making that decision to run the football?
Yeah, I think eventually you can, but the way I'm looking at it, it's like a race. What's going to happen first? Either is the A going to learn how to protect himself better and, get out of bounds? And I don't know if he'll ever learn to slide like a major league baseball player, but at least be some, get down to the ground in a way that doesn't endanger getting a cleat caught in the turf and ending up with another torn knee. Or is he going to get taken off the field on a stretcher? And that's, which is going to happen first. I think eventually you can learn it, but how eventually that is obviously is going to be key in whether or not he makes it through this season, or who knows, next season, or whenever it is. you know, it just seems inevitable when, you know, that run up the sideline last night, I think, was the one that I was a little most disturbed by, just because he could have, you know, when he thought he could cut out of bounds, there was a linebacker in his way, and that started him kind of pinballing back and forth between some defenders. So, you know, what's going to happen first? Your guess is as good as mine.
What do you think it is that causes RG3 to take those risks? Does he get caught up in the heat of the moment? Does he misjudge how fast that defender is and he doesn't think he's going to get hit? Or is it just pure instinct, you're operating on no conscious thought whatsoever, and it just happens?
I think it's the latter. You know, I think it's very easy for him to sit down when he's talking to us in the media or sending out a tweet to the fans that he's going to take better care of himself, or, you know, as he did last night, or, you know, talking to Jay Gruden, Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, whoever, about taking better care of himself. That's one thing. But I think when he gets out there, he just thinks he can get, you know, that he can cut up the sideline and get those extra 5 yards and get a, you know, a third and one instead of a third and seven, when, you know, he should be able to make a third and seven. But there, I just don't think that thought process mechanically goes through his mind. He's just wired, you know, at the moment, and you can unwire yourself. It can take time and everything like that. But, you know, I think it's just his instinct to try to get as much as he can, get that extra 4 or 5 yards, and, you know, get, you know, at the risk of getting banged around.
2 years ago, RG3 was one of the young quarterbacks everybody was talking about, exciting young player, and was basically given the job not long after the team acquired him via the first round, second overall pick in the draft. When you look at what Kyle Shanahan did with Griffin as the unquestioned starter, getting all the first team reps, all the first team opportunities in the preseason, and now what Shanahan is doing in Cleveland, where the first-round pick, Johnny Manziel, is having those reps and opportunities diluted, do you think maybe Shanahan wishes they'd gone with Manziel and they'd gotten Manziel ready the same way they got Griffin ready 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think he has to. You know, I think, you know, from literally the first day of rookie minicamp, Mike Shanahan said, you know, Griffin's the starter. There's not going to be competition. He's going to take all the first-team reps. Boom, he had them all throughout the offseason, all throughout training camp. And, you know, I'm trying to recall his second, you know, first couple of games as a, you know, in the preseason as a rookie. And he, you know, he certainly looked better than Johnny Manziel did at this point. And, yeah, and I think, if, you know, they're sitting there flipping a coin in Cleveland today, trying to decide whether it's him or Brian Hoyer who's going to be the starter. But, yeah, I bet Kyle wishes that they, you know, if they're going to, you know, it seems inevitable they're going to go with them, whether it's Manziel now or, you know, in October or whenever. And whenever it happens, it's going to be a lot uglier than it would have been for Kyle Shanahan had they drafted him. This is the guy that's our future. He's the starter.
A rookie who arrived in 2012 with far less fanfare became one of the best young running backs in the NFL, Alfred Morris, but you've noticed a troubling trend that could be an issue for the team going forward.
Yeah, you know, he lost the handle on that pitch out last time. Actually never really gotten a handle, killing the Redskins' first drive, which started off, you know, really well with that completion to Jordan Reed and DeSean Jackson. But then on first down, he can't, you know, he's looking downfield, can't handle the pitch. If I'm not mistaken, he is either the league leader in fumbles since he came into the league or close to it. He went his rookie year, they're pretty fortunate. He didn't lose very many of them, but the ball was hitting the ground. Last year, he lost a few more of them. And, you know, this is a guy who, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, RG3 success being on him. You know, if Alfred Morris can run the ball and keep things going that way, that certainly makes Griffin's job a heck of a lot easier as the quarterback if you have that threat there and he can do it. You know, he can gain the yards. He was the second leading rusher on the team last night despite playing just the first quarter. But, you know, putting the ball on the ground, and he did it, you know, last year in the opener against the Eagles, a similar kind of play that resulted in a safety. And, you know, it's just something that he's gotta tighten up on. Going into year three in the league, you know, I don't know how much better it's going to get necessarily. This might be something that they can, you know, live with and hope that it doesn't happen at a key, awful moment in a game.
There's been some questions about the receiver depth chart. You've got the arrival of DeSean Jackson, Andre Roberts, veteran Santana Moss, Pierre Garçon, the number one guy a year ago. Do you see any surprises in the final configuration of the receiver depth chart?
You did not mention the guy who I think is going to end up, if he's not the number four receiver right now, he will be by within the next few weeks, I think, is Ryan Grant. Fifth round draft pick out of Tulane. From day one of rookie minicamp, Jay Gruden said that he looks like a 10-year veteran out there. You know, very, very good route runner, good hands, not fast. You know, was definitely in the bottom half of at the combine in his 40 time. But he caught a touchdown last night. He just makes some catches in training camp in Richmond that just had everybody's jaw dropping. So I think he's there. Aldrick Robinson is a fast guy, and they're trying to make him for 3 years, been trying to make him into a fast receiver. At times it looked like he's getting it. At times it looks like he's not. Now, when I asked Jay Gruden last week, you know, about the wide receiver depth chart, he mentioned Robinson and Grant, you know, as being behind the big three there. And did not mention Santana Moss. So, you know, Moss at the moment might be that sixth wide receiver who will be active sometimes, inactive sometimes, you know, and basically waiting to see if somebody gets injured to get some consistent playing time.
Now, on the defensive side of the ball, I guess we could say that the reason why neither Brian Hoyer nor Johnny Manziel looked all that good for Cleveland on Monday night was because there are reasons to think that the Washington defense is going to be better than expected. What do you see in that defense that would give you encouragement based on the preseason so far?
See some pass rush. Ryan Kerrigan got two sacks last night, even though that first one seemed to be a missed snap count by about half the Browns offense didn't know the ball was being snapped, and part of that half was the guy that was supposed to be blocking Ryan Kerrigan. He got another one later. Arakpo got a sack last week in their brief playing time against New England. Of course, that was against Ryan Mallett and not Tom Brady. But, you know, and they have yet to get Jason Hatcher in there. He's supposed to, you know, their big free agent acquisition on the defensive side of the ball. He is supposed to play against Baltimore on Saturday. He's been practicing. Just didn't feel he was quite ready to go yesterday. So he's kind of the missing, you know, the other part to the pass rush. You know, and they've got some, you know, shown a little bit of defensive back. David Amerson has made the cornerback who will start opposite D'Angelo Hall. Has made some great strides since last year. You know, he was very, very hit or miss last year as playing nickelback and has been, you know, put on some weight. Seems to be tackling better and covering better. So, you know, they could make a lot of improvement and still not be a real good defense, considering where they started last year, 29th or 30th in points allowed, I believe. But, you know, I think they can, you know, they're looking a little bit better.
Now, when we look at the entire NFC East, I personally believe that this is the year that the wheels come off for the Dallas Cowboys. I believe that the Giants are going to have a hard time being effective and productive. I think it comes down to Philadelphia and Washington. And possibly Washington could steal it from Philly. What's your thought right now on what a fair expectation is for how that division shakes out?
Yeah, you know, I think that if nine wins can take the division, which it has in most of the last few years, or many of the last few years, I should say, I think they can have a shot. Now, Philly, you know, really they do take that next step into one of the top teams in the NFC, you know, and get, you know, 11 or 12 wins. I think that would be out of reach for this Redskins team. So. You know, I think what they have going for them is, you know, and I wrote on CSNWashington.com this morning, you know, they've got a lot to do. You know, they definitely had their issues last night. They've got a lot to do. They have to turn around real quick and play on Saturday in Baltimore, you know, and then boom, that's it for the starters until the start of the regular season. But they start with Houston and the Jaguars, who, you know, neither one of whom are strong teams. Last year they started Philly, Green Bay, 0-2, never really recovered. So, you know, I think they will still have a chance to maybe work out some of their issues there. If they can come out of those two games with wins, you know, then they go into Philadelphia, and, you know, that'll kind of be the first statement game of the season right there when those two meet in week three.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. Thanks, as always, for giving us some time, Rich, and we'll be checking out your work at csnwashington.com. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Appreciate it, Mike.
All right, there he is, Rich Tandler, csnwashington.com. Anything you want to know about what's going on with that team, dial up csnwashington.com. Rich always has inside scoop and comprehensive information, and we hope to do the same thing when it's time to answer your questions. We're going to do that after the break. If you first pick up your cell phone device and dial 888-237-5269, that's the number to call, 888-237-5269. We'll be right back to answer your questions via Twitter and phone. If anybody calls, I know we got started late today and it throws everyone off, but give us a call anyway. We'll be right back. Oh, it's PFT Planet time, and that means, as always, we start with a Twitter question. At DanNielsen36, what effect, if any, will the Cluey Vikings settlement have on the other organizations and the NFL as a whole? I've yet to see the details of the settlement, but the bottom line is the Vikings feared some sort of potential liability to Chris Cluey, or they wouldn't have settled the case. And when the Vikings issued that summary of their investigative report, acknowledging that maybe Cluey was cut in part because of the distraction created by his advocacy for gay rights, but not necessarily his advocacy for gay rights, I knew the Vikings wouldn't have a problem. Potential minefield to walk through. So they work it out, they move forward, and I think one of the big takeaways from this is teams need to make sure that the coaches, the members of the staff, assistants, and anyone else who's exposed to the players and the players themselves, they aren't engaging in the kind of speech that can create potential problems. There are protected classes under federal and state law. This dovetails a lot with what happened in Miami. You have to know what you can and can't say in the workplace. And I recall when Michael Sam came out as gay, Ryan Clark, now with Washington, said, we just want to know what we can say. What can we say to him? Because we poke fun at each other all the time. We need to know where the lines are. And I think the teams, in light of the Jonathan Martin situation in Miami and the Chris Cluey situation in Minnesota, need to spend the time and effort devising strategies for informing the players what they can and can't say, and also the rest of the coaching staff and anybody else who is in the building. And then you come up with an engaging and informative and intriguing way to present that information so the message gets through. And also, I think it's critical to have an anonymous line, telephone, text, email, etc., where you can make a complaint, where you can raise a concern, where something's happening so the team knows about it, the team can do something about it, and stop a problem before it becomes too big of a problem. Next up, another question from at Big Tesh. What's the biggest obstacle in Seattle for repeating? Well, probably the Seahawks themselves, because when you climb to the top of the mountain and you win the Super Bowl, and then you reset to 0-0, and the target on your back is bigger than it's ever been in franchise history. You can't afford to be complacent. You can't afford to be lackadaisical. You can't rest on your laurels. You have to be ready to go. Now, it's somewhat encouraging that maybe the 49ers are in the midst of a potential implosion, although I'm not buying it. Maybe the Cardinals are going to struggle now that they've lost both of their inside linebackers in Carlos Dansby and Darrell Washington, and now Darnell Dockett, one of their defensive ends for the season in that 3-4 defense. But I think the Seahawks need to find a way to have the same fire and passion that they had in 2013. One thing that helps, Percy Harvin feels like he really wasn't much part of the team that won the Super Bowl, although he had quite an impact in the Super Bowl win over Denver. You just need to find a way to make it fresh, need to find a way to make it new, need to find a way to focus on building legacies, and also need to find a way to comply with the rules as it relates to illegal contact and defensive holding. Dean Blandino on the Dan Patrick Show today talking to me about where this point of emphasis came from, how it's going to be enforced. It's going to be very interesting. Week one in Seattle, Packers at Seahawks. Will there be contact beyond the first 5 yards of a receiver's route? Will they throw the flags? Will the Seahawks play like they did last year? Interesting stuff for the Seahawks this year, and whether or not this new emphasis on the defensive fouls will affect them. Let's go to the phone line. Kevin in Tulsa on PFT Live. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, brother. Good to talk to you. I was sitting here watching ESPN day after day, talk shows after talk shows, and I hear so much about Johnny Manziel, okay? And I understand he commands a lot of press. However, I have heard very little to no talk about this new Minnesota Vikings offense under North Turner and Zimmer. The only thing you hear is, how did Teddy Bridgewater do in the second half of a preseason game? I honestly believe that the Vikings are the next big turnaround team in the NFL, and under North Turner's offense, they're going to shock a lot of people in the NFC North, and the threat come playoff time, I believe, too.
Well, and I know there's a quiet confidence within the Vikings organization. We had co-owner Mark Wolf on the program several months ago, and when I asked him what he expected this year, you could just sense a little bit of giddiness in his voice and just this idea, you know what, we got nothing to lose. People don't expect us to be any good, so we can go out and we can be good. We can surprise people. I think they'd prefer to be off radar. They prefer people talking about the Cleveland Browns and other teams. They don't want people talking about what could be a surprise for the other teams in the NFC North. And when you have a first-round quarterback who at one point was considered to be the first overall pick in the draft and fell all the way down to number 32, in part because of that abysmal pro day workout where he didn't wear the gloves that he now wears all the time. It's good that he's playing in Minnesota outdoors the next 2 years because he won't do much sweating in those gloves. But Teddy Bridgewater creating buzz because he's Teddy Bridgewater. And if the Vikings thought Matt Cassel was going to be great in the North Turner offense, and North Turner has said he lobbied to get Matt Cassel to Cleveland when he was a free agent in 2013, unsuccessfully. Why do you use the 32nd overall pick in the draft on Bridgewater? Why do you trade back into round one to get Bridgewater if you're sold on Cassel? So it's a natural distraction that comes with taking a quarterback in round one, and it very well could be Cassel this year, and maybe the Vikings will be better off, and maybe they could contend for an unlikely playoff berth, as unlikely as the one that they snagged in 2012, when Adrian Peterson ran for nearly 2,100 yards. Let's go back to the Twitter bag. This one comes from @ColbyD13. Who will have the better season, Foles, Bernard, or Stacy? I assume that refers to Eagles quarterback Nick Foles, Bengals running back Giovanni Bernard, and Rams running back Zach Stacy. Feels like a fantasy question, and really, of the three, here's a general philosophy I have when it comes to quarterback, what to fantasy and quarterbacks. Because I get a lot of questions, who do you take in the first round? And you know, there's always going to be a running back or two that generates big numbers, but I think it's easier to predict and project quarterbacks who are going to have big years. And it very well could be that Nick Foles has a big year as the full season starter for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, he's never been the week one starter before, so we don't know how defenses are going to catch up with him. But of those three guys, I know Bernard going to be a staple in the Hugh Jackson offense, but the risk of injury is greater with running backs. The reality of committees is as present as ever. There aren't many workhorse running backs. I like to go with a quarterback that I think is going to have a big year. Now, he's not going to have a Drew Brees or a Peyton Manning type of a year, but I think Foles, of those three players, is going to have the best year. And I assume that the question came not from a wins and losses standpoint or an overall production or value to the team standpoint. I assume that comes from a fantasy football standpoint. But I always play it safe with that, get that franchise quarterback, and then you try to get running backs that you think have a chance to emerge. But as that position gets devalued, that position in fantasy football becomes devalued as well. Another Twitter question from C. Crawl, one of the loyal Twitter question askers in these parts. Any chance we see the 49ers fall to third in the division due to all the injuries? Or the 49ers this year's Atlanta Falcons? You know, there's a lot of buzz after that 27-0 home loss to the Broncos in the preseason opener at Candlestick Park. Not Candlestick Park, at Levi's Stadium, the Field of Jeans. I always wonder, when you see an outcome like that in a preseason game, if the two teams went into the game with different agendas. You know, Denver didn't look so good against Seattle in week one of the preseason. So did Denver go in there trying to win the game, and did San Francisco go in there just trying to evaluate players? Either way, when you look at the injuries, Navarro Bowman's going to be gone for half the season. Alden Smith, linebacker, he could be this week's Friday afternoon bad news dump with his suspension that the team reportedly expects to be 6 to 8 games in duration. You get the injuries at running back, and you still have questions about Colin Kaepernick. If you take away week one last year when he threw for over 400 yards against the Green Bay Packers, Colin Kaepernick averaged 185 passing yards per game in the regular season. That's not franchise quarterback numbers. I mean, I know that there are people who think that Colin Kaepernick gets unfairly criticized, but you can't call the guy a top five quarterback if he's only throwing for 185 yards per game. Have defenses begun to figure him out? Who's going to be the backup? Nobody looks good. Blaine Gabbert, Josh Johnson, nobody looks good behind Colin Kaepernick, and he can get injured if he tries to run the ball. Any of these quarterbacks who try to run the ball can get injured. They've got the holdout situation with Alex Boone. Maybe Justin Smith is getting far closer to the end of his career than the beginning. How's the receiving core going to mesh? I think there are questions that need to be addressed, and there are concerns. I have faith, though, in Jim Harbaugh. He finds a way to get everybody on the same page, get the most out of who he has, coach everybody up, and do a great job with it. He's been to three NFC title games in 3 years as an NFL head coach. Hard to bet against him, but it wouldn't shock me if they end up in third place in the NFC West. It wouldn't shock me if they end up in third place in the NFC West and still take a wild card berth away from any of the other second place teams in the divisions in the NFC. Last question for the day goes to Dave Palmer, 41. Who's better, Russell Wilson or Andrew Luck? Well, Russell Wilson's got the ring. And I've said in the past, I'd take Russell Wilson over Andrew Luck because there's just something about Russell Wilson, that competitiveness, that he's got an aura about him. But Andrew Luck does too. And Andrew Luck really gained, I think, a lot of style points and a lot of confidence of his teammates, of his fans, of the media, of everyone, when he led the Colts back from that huge deficit against the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, we like to talk about the collapse by the Chiefs, but the Colts did a pretty good job of getting things together to get themselves in position to win that game. There's something special about both players. I don't think you can go wrong with either player. And actually, now that Wilson has his Super Bowl ring, maybe Luck's the guy you want because Luck's a little hungrier. Luck's going to want to show that he can get one too. But I don't want to discount Russell Wilson's desire to get as many as he possibly can. He wants to be regarded as one of the great quarterbacks of all time. The only way to do that is to win as many Super Bowls as possible. When we return on Wednesday, the march towards Super Bowl 49 will continue as we get closer and closer to the start of the first game that counts, only 2 weeks and 2 days away. 6 o'clock Eastern Time tonight, NBCSN Pro Football Talk returns. Half-hour edition. We will pack a lot into that half hour. I've got Dan Patrick duties tomorrow, 9 to 12 Eastern Time. We'll do this again at 1 o'clock Eastern, PFT Live tomorrow. Check us out then. Check us out around the clock at ProFootballTalk.com. See you back here again tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.